Roto Grinders presents the Daily Fantasy Fix podcast. Dan Bach talks to the biggest personalities in DFS, delivers commentary on the industry's most important topics, and gives you the advice you need to help build winning lineups.
Both the salary and the matchup are just too good. If you are not playing him in your head-to-head games, you are just going to lose.
You didn't really think we were going to get rid of that, did you?
Here's your host, the one and only, Dan Bach.
Hey everyone, welcome Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix podcast for you here, and doing a little special edition pod for you this week because, of course, the NCAA tournament's coming up this weekend, and you want to win your bracket pool. I know I do. I'm in about five of them, and I haven't been having the luck that, I certainly would have hoped for. So I'm going to be relying on some friends this year to hopefully give me the tips to put me over the edge. So I thought I'd bring them into the loop with you guys today. And lucky enough to sit down with the guys over at TeamRankings.com. We've got Tom Federico, David Hess. Tom, David, welcome to the podcast. Good to chat. How are you guys?
Good, Dan. Thanks for having us on, man.
Yeah, pretty good, except for 3 hours of sleep.
Well, I was going to say, like, you know, I would normally feel sorry for you, but you put yourself into this. When you get into the bracket business, there is 1 week a year where you're not going to have a lot of sleep, and this is certainly it. And the one thing that you guys, or one of the things that you guys have really going well for you over at Team Rankings, Tom, is bracket pools. And, you know, not just saying these are the picks that we like, which obviously is part of it, but I love what you guys are doing in terms of maybe like a corollary to DFS about looking a little bit further, not just in terms of who you are picking, but who your opponents are picking. So before we kind of jump into that, give me the little backstory on Team Rankings, how long you guys been around and doing stuff around brackets and sports betting in general.
Yeah, so I'll try to keep it brief. We're a dinosaur in the internet world, at least, as well. Our site launched in 1999, and so it's something that transformed basically from a hobby into a business over time. And when it comes to bracket pools, you know, we were geeks, we were nerds, engineers, you know, math guys, and we were applying concepts to bracket pools that, you know, probably become pretty familiar right now to, like you said, in the DFS world, excuse me, you know, stuff like game theory and looking at percentage ownership of players. We were doing the same thing for bracket pools and looking at, you know, popularity of teams and also mashing that up with the best predictions. And, you know, we were doing really well. We were winning personal bracket pools much more often than you would expect. And so, you know, the light bulb went off and we thought, hey, this is a big deal. Why don't we try to productize this? And you know, here we are today, almost 15 years later. So we did our first kind of premium product for bracket pools back in 2004. So our algorithms and our technology have essentially been evolving since then. And now we're at the point where, you know, we've got a server farm of 18 computers at Amazon.com that just runs 24/7 all night and all day, starting Selection Sunday, crunching all the numbers and helping us figure out what the best bracket is for your pool.
David, what kind of background do you have in this? I mean, is this straight, like, were you kind of out of the analytics world? Were you out of the sports betting world? Were you a little bit of both? Where does your background come from?
Yeah, I'm more sports analytic background. I mean, not in like my education, but in how I got involved with Team Rankings. I went to school for neuroscience, but I've just been a huge sports statistics fan my whole life. And, you know, as a kid, I would sit in the office with my dad's computer and mess around with stats all day and stuff like that. So that's my background is sports stats, and I've gotten more into office pools and gambling and prediction and stuff since I started working for Team Rankings about, well, it's been a while now, 7 years, I think.
Wow.
Really? Seven? David bets on everything, Dan, by the way. There's nothing. As long as there's a spreadsheet available to do analysis, David is going to consider betting on it.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'd rather be getting my advice from a neuroscience guy than maybe like Bruno or something around the corner. So you went in the right direction there in terms of finding the right guys to kind of put the numbers together. And I alluded to it in the opening, talking about, you know, the game theory around it, and that's something that, you know, when DFS first started, people overlooked it. Now, you know, we've got an entire projected ownership on every single player who plays every single night because it's become that important. How have those elements in DFS kind of translate to, you know, the office pool that people are playing in terms of, you know, selecting their teams?
Well, I mean, the format of the contest is obviously a little different, right? And you're not like salary cap DFS. Obviously, it's players, not teams. And, you know, it's a smaller number of events typically. You've got a certain number of players on your team. They're playing one game that night. And, you know, the outcomes are going to determine of those, that small number of games are going to determine, you know, what happens. And obviously, you know, now you've got an NCAA tournament bracket where the scoring system is different and it's played out in rounds. And, you know, there's 67 interdependent decisions you need to make in terms of picking all the winners in the bracket. So, you know, the complexity, I would argue, is higher. Well, in some ways, maybe not. Obviously, in DFS, you've got a larger pool of potential players to pick from. And in the bracket, you've got a sort of a fixed group of these 68 teams. But, you know, that being said, the analog in terms of what we do to kind of the tools that are available in DFS is it's extremely similar. I mean, you're looking at, you know, DFS tools that are pulling percentage ownerships of players and then letting you, you know, generate kind of portfolios of lineups that you're going to play in big GPPs and stuff like that. Our product does exactly the same thing for bracket pools where, you know, we're going out and pulling all the public picking trends data from sites like ESPN and Yahoo and the big national bracket platforms. You know, we're gathering predictions from multiple top algorithmic models in the betting markets to form our ratings on teams, and then doing just millions of simulations that are taking into account the scoring system of your pool and the size of your pool and other factors, and essentially putting all that data together and coming up with, you know, the optimal bracket for kind of your pool size and scoring system, and then a series of alternative brackets that you can play along with that optimal bracket as a portfolio.
Yeah, I think it's funny, optimal bracket. It's weird to hear such thing because we always talk about like optimal lineups or quote-unquote cash game lineups. I mean, David, talk about the difference in size, because I think that's the fascinating thing about bracket pools is you might be playing with 12 of your buddies that you grew up with and you run this pool every year, or you could be entering, you know, one of these you know, ESPN type pools where you're going against a million different people. Now, obviously, yeah, there's a lot of variance in the $1 million one. There's no question about it. You need to be nearly perfect there. But there is definitely a spread in between where, you know, if you're in a high stakes 100 man versus a lower stakes, you know, 20 man contest, I'm guessing maybe even the approach on those could be a little bit different.
Yeah, actually, you mentioned a cash game versus a big tournament. That's a great analogy. Like the little small 10 person bracket pools are... Yeah, they're places where you want to go conservative, you want to go high ceiling, high floor. You want to not take too many risks and just make sure that you're up there with a good solid score. And, you know, if you're playing with your friends in the office, a good solid score is going to get you in the money most of the time. Like you said, if you're playing with some higher stakes people, you probably need to do more than just pick all the favorites, right? You need to find a couple of undervalued plays in there that you think you can find that other people can't find. But yeah, and then if you're in a huge bracket pool, I guess the analogy, instead of finding... it depends on your scoring system, obviously, but in the standard scoring system of 1-2-4, you know, doubling every time, if you're in a huge tournament, you basically need to find that undervalued late round play that hopefully not many other people are picking, that if you hit on is going to narrow the field tremendously for you. And if it's a big enough pool, you'll probably need to throw in some other, you know, undervalued plays in other parts of the bracket and hit on all of them in order to have a chance to win.
So Tom, he brings up a good point about scoring systems, because that's another thing that's really unique to NCAA tournaments. I mean, I think I play in a scoring system where you get your points per, you know, whatever seed, like if your seed wins, you get that X number of points. Is that kind of discussed? Because, I mean, you guys obviously have numbers in here, but you also have a lot of written columns as well. Is there any tailoring to scoring systems, or do you guys talk about unique scoring systems as, you know, and how to approach them differently? Because I know, like, that's the fun thing about, you know, some of these bracket pools. They're not all the same.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge scoring system, as David said, is a huge part of it, and I'll probably let him explain some more of the details. But the short answer is, you know, we don't produce as much content as Grinders does in terms of kind of podcasts and sort of, you know, articles and things like that. We try to just actually bake the majority of all the intelligence, like, directly into the product. We're very engineering focused as a company, right? So, you know, I mean, the short answer is, like, you know, given the inputs of a scoring system and an expected profile of how your opponents are going to pick, and the size of your pool, there, you know, that we can do the math to come up with what we feel is the optimal bracket. And so that's all kind of boiled into the product. When you come to our site, you actually set up your pool. We ask you some questions about your scoring system things like that. And, you know, what we found, I mean, just to share some kind of examples. So, you know, upset picking bonuses are really popular, and they're, you know, along the lines of what you were saying, you know, like, or if it's seed driven, which we also support, you know, you're obviously increasing the reward, you know, for taking a, you know, more of a long shot type pick, obviously, and making more of those picks. And, you know, almost universally, it's kind of funny what we find when we kind of run all these simulations, because in smaller pools with the traditional scoring system, as David said, 1-2-4-8, 16-32, you know, most often the case that people, your average sort of casual bracket picker, plays it way too aggressively and, you know, is always kind of obsessed with, oh, what are the upsets I'm going to pick? And when in reality, like, you know, oftentimes your best strategy in these smaller pools is to just kind of let your opponent shoot themselves in the foot. And it's a war of attrition, and you just kind of pick mostly favorites and you come out on the end, you know, on top at the end. But then when you look at the upset bonus pools, like, and so we'll often get complaints for, like, our small pool brackets, like, oh, this is way too chalky, right? Like, where are the upsets? And it's just like, you know, the data does not play it out, right? This is the one that actually gives you a better chance to win. And with our upset bonus pools, it's oftentimes the reverse, where, you know, all the research we've done shows that people are most often, when they're in upset bonus pools, not nearly as aggressive enough. And, you know, understanding the huge benefits that can, you know, accrue if you pick, like, you know, a 20% winner, but get, like, tons and tons of points if they win, or you know, win two games and make the Sweet 16. So, you know, people look at, like, our optimal bracket for some of these upset bonus pools, and they just can't believe it. Like, you're picking this 13 seed, like, two or three 13 seeds to make the Sweet 16. And it's like, yeah, you know, we're not expecting two or three of those seeds to make this, you know, those teams to make the Sweet 16. But in terms of, you know, the overall kind of risk reward, kind of where it stands on the spectrum of risk versus reward, like, these are the types of plays you need to be making in a scoring system like this.
We're talking with Tom Federico, David Hess of TeamRankings.com. And I mean, you just nailed it. Like, there's so many biases that people run into when they're building, you know, their brackets, and they don't think about these things. And if you kind of, and I think that's the cool thing too, David. I mean, you guys simulate, you know, millions of times over, and you've got a ridiculous amount of data that goes into those simulations. And even if you say to yourself, you know, I'm taking Duke to win it all, I think they're the team that's going to win it all, you can almost tailor some of these quote unquote optimal brackets, I would assume, to some of the players, or Thomas, you could tell I'm in DFS world, and some of the teams that, you know, you are just in love with, and you can still do your own, but also look at, you know, maybe a more optimal way in terms of games that you're either undecided on, or, you know, what a better build is for your, you know, your particular contest. I like the meshing of two things when you can add your own elements to what maybe the computer spits out as an optimal way to do it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the things I like to do is I play in, obviously, I like the NCAA tournament. I play in a lot of pools. I probably end up with, you know, 30 brackets across all my pools. And I love going in and looking at custom brackets for a whole bunch of different scoring systems and finding one that has that team. I'm like, oh, I just really want to pick, you know, Kentucky to win. So I find a bracket that we've optimized that has Kentucky in the final, winning the whole thing, and I enter that in a pool. And I know that, like, because that bracket has a very risky pick in the final, it will have been optimized around the rest of the picks to maybe have lower risk in the rest of the bracket if it's only a medium-sized pool and you don't want to go too crazy. Or even, I was doing a write-up today about how your championship pick actually affects there was a team that was a good undervalued championship pick, it seemed like. But then, because it was so risky, you needed to go conservative in the final. But then if you go conservative in the final on the other side of the bracket, it turns out that team, for whatever quirk of I don't know why it's happening, but people are picking that team to lose in the final really often. So it actually ends up like counteracting this undervalued pick that you make in the championship game. And there's no way to like pick this team as your undervalued championship pick and then still go conservative in the other half without like getting rid of all the value. So it's something that I would never be able to come up with on my own if the simulations hadn't shown me this bracket and made me dig into it and figure out why it's happening like that.
Well,
it's Purdue, Dan.
Well,
we'll give away some of the farm, but if you think Purdue is a good undervalued pick to be NCAA champion, you're not necessarily wrong, but you should read the write-up.
I like it. There's more to it than thinking that they're undervalued, you plug them in there. I'm into that.
They are an undervalued champion pick. No one, we're not that. They're anyone looking at, for example, I don't know if we want to transition to picks here, but yeah. Anyone looking at, kind of undervalued picks in this year's bracket. If Purdue doesn't float to the top of the list kind of immediately for you, you need to reconsider. But then the question, like David said, is, I'll go off on a little tangent here. It's been very interesting seeing how this whole concept of value-based picking has kind of evolved, right? Like 10 years ago, we were the only people doing this, and no one even understood what the concept of a value pick in a bracket pool even meant. Okay, oversimplification. Some people, David did, some people did. The general public didn't. Now, fantasy DFS has gotten so popular, and this whole concept of value picking has become, more well known, and people who are doing it in fantasy have now realized, oh, how do I apply this to my bracket? And you're seeing more articles coming out from all sorts of different people saying, oh, who are the value picks in this year's bracket? But it's more complicated than that, right? There's just so many other decisions and sort of scoring chances in the bracket that just because, like, even you might start out by saying, hey, it might not be in your best interest to pick the most likely team to win the NCAA tournament as your bracket champion. Oh yeah, because they might be overpicked. People get that. But then the next level up is, well, who's the most undervalued team then? Maybe I should pick them. And the reality is, like, that's not even necessarily, sort of the home run solution. There's more complexity and nuance beyond that, just because there's so many other kind of decision nodes in the bracket that come into play that even just, it's not as simple as just saying, hey, who are the most undervalued teams and I should pick one of them as my champion.
And David, what kind of goes into that thought process of what you categorize as undervalued? Is it straight, like, odds versus percentage that people are picking them, or are you digging into does your own formula work into that as well? I mean, or is it just as simple as odds versus pick percentage?
I mean, it's odds versus pick percentage, but by odds I'm talking about the the advancement odds that we make on our own. We don't just take the odds from the betting markets and use them. And
gotcha.
So at the point where I'm comparing odds and pick percentage, we've done a lot of analysis on, team lineup changes and missing players and game location and all that stuff. So So once I'm looking at over and under value teams, I've already condensed all my analysis into a number, and then I'm just looking at the number. And I'm not at that point worrying about how that number was created, because I just have confidence in my earlier steps, you know?
Yeah, but what kind of a spread do you need between those two to kind of quantify, you think, as a top value pick?
I mean, it definitely changes every year, and depending on what round you're looking at. And like this year, there's no team that's got a huge gap between their odds to win the tournament and their pick percentage. I think the largest raw difference that we have is Purdue, which we have at about 6.5% to win and picked by 3% of the public. And
let's do a first round one, because I think that there might be a larger spread there. And
yeah,
let's face it, everybody loves to pick an upset or something here in the first round. So let's find a spot that kind of falls under this category for first round picks.
Sure. So there's it looks like the biggest value, just in terms of raw difference that we have here, is the St. Bonaventure UCLA play-in winner against Florida. We have them about 1/3 chance to win, and they're being picked by 16% of the public. So that's a 17% difference. That's on the small side for the largest difference in the first round compared to past years. Looking at the bracket this year, the committee got a lot of flack for the bubble teams and who got in and out, but in terms of seeding, I don't think they made that many egregious mistakes this year. Like there's like last year, I think Wichita State was an 11 seed and was favored in the first round, right? There's nothing along those lines this year. There's less value to be found in the first round this year. It's going to be a little bit tougher to differentiate yourself with first round picks.
I'm curious on this front, and you would know because you do this guy. You guys have done this forever, but since they started the play-in game, is the play-in winner like? Are they always, you know? And you're always talking about the 11 seed, not the 16. But are they always like the lowest pick percentage though? Because I can't imagine that many people, especially people who are doing brackets ahead of time, are willing to take a team that they don't even know to go multiple rounds. I mean, in my mind, just from a, you know, the same way in DFS where if somebody has an injury designation next to their name, people are afraid to take them. Does that apply, or is this just a false narrative in my mind?
You know, I don't have the exact data in front of me, but I think you're correct. They're usually lower. Like this year, they're definitely the two lowest 11 seed picks are the play-in winner slots. And it's definitely been the case some in the past. But I mean, that's counteracted by generally those teams being slightly worse. I mean, I know the committee isn't great, but in general, the lower seeds are slightly worse. Teams in the play-in game have been slightly worse. But yeah, we're not really, that's interesting that you mentioned the bias of not wanting to pick the game because of the uncertainty. We end up, that's a thing that we can exploit, right? Like we just talked about, there's a lot of value there because people don't know who the winner is. But if you think about it, the winner's probably the better team there. I mean, you know, the worst team can win sometimes. Obviously, upsets happen. But you're probably getting the better team, or you're getting a team that's almost as good as the other team when you take the winner there. And you shouldn't really have that bias against them unless you're making picks by, you know, looking at a specific player or something and being like, oh, I really think that this guy could make a run if he makes it past the first round, that kind of thing. But when we treat him as just one entity, that's the average projection of these two other teams, then it allows us to look past that bias and just look at the numbers and make picks based on that instead of being scared of, well, what if the team that I want to win doesn't win? Well, that's already baked into it. So,
well, I got one last team I need to talk about because they're really a lightning rod on whether they should have gotten in or at all, and that's Oklahoma here against Rhode Island. They come in at 2-point underdogs. It's funny because this is another one where I feel like there's been so much vitriol by the talking heads on TV about how undeserving Oklahoma is to be in this tournament. And admittedly, they've won like two games since January, so I get it, and I don't disagree with that. But what kind of vibes are you getting in terms of the numbers regarding this matchup for them against Rhode Island, who is, like I said, favored in this one? Just curious your thoughts on that game.
You know, we're pretty in line with the market on that one. We have this tool that allows me to look at something that we call the game score for every game, which is just basically margin of victory adjusted for opponent and game location. So you can compare like subsets of games for a team and see if they've been playing better or worse, you know, context adjusted, right? So you, I use it a lot to look at how a team plays with and without players that have been injured and seeing how that impacts the team. And so for Rhode Island, Matthews missed some games. And so they're a little bit better than their raw rating, but I think E.C. Matthews is a name that people that follow college basketball kind of are familiar with because he's been in the tournament before. He's kind of the star for them, and they probably think that him being out maybe had a bigger effect than it did. But, I mean, it's a small effect, but we still have them around looks like they should be an 8 according to our numbers, and they're actually a 7. And Oklahoma, I mean, you know the narrative there. They've been slumping for months now. Yeah. And that's true. If you look at the numbers, they have been playing worse. They grade in around a 10 or 11 seed. I think they're fairly seeded based on skill. I think if you'd look at resumes, maybe they shouldn't have made it. But given the teams that are in the tournament, they're seeded fine. And our numbers kind of agree with the market there. We have looks like I have it as 1.8 point edge to Rhode Island based on the raw numbers. So it's pretty.
So Vegas is they're right on this one for once. Jeez, look at that. I'll be curious to see how
they're usually pretty good at being pretty right.
Yeah, they're pretty good. They're pretty good. You're right. What am I saying? For once, it's interesting to I'm a DFS guy. You know, obviously we're numbers driven, but there's also some narratives. And there's one sport where I feel it crops itself up more so than others, and that can be basketball, just because, you know, the players can have so much influence. If, you know, Trae Young just goes absolutely bonkers in a game, that can totally change everything. And it's the me versus the world mentality. If Lon Kruger, and he's not a bad tournament coach, if memory serves me correctly as well. So I'm calling the Oklahoma upset, but again, I got to dig into the numbers, and that's what I'm going to do over at TeamRankings.com. And I hope other people check them out too, because I'll tell you what, just tons and tons of great data. I talked to these guys before we jumped on today and said I used you guys for all the college football data you had because it was easy, it was accessible, it was free. And now that you guys are doing this, you know, pools, this NCAA pools, it's good to be back on your site and check it out. I guess best way for people to check it to get into it, Tom, we're doing teamrankings.com/grinders. And what's a package kind of include here for the NCAA tournament? Because obviously there's a lot of competitive guys here on RG who are listening to this podcast. So what exactly are they kind of getting in a package with you guys?
Sure. Yeah. So our standard bracket package costs $39, and it includes basically a suite of not only customized brackets for your pools, but also a bunch of analysis tools that we've created. So, you know, the crux of the product is our bracket optimizer, effectively. So, you know, like I said, you come in, $39 covers an unlimited number of bracket pools. You can put in 2 pools, you can put in 50. And then, you know, you enter some details about your pools and it will spit out that kind of optimized portfolio of brackets, including the best bracket for your pool. But in addition to that, we've got a couple other really cool tools that are included. There's a feature called the Data Grid, which is effectively a value finding tool. It's where we put all of our public picking data in there, as well as all of our round by round projections. So at the click of a button, we've got some cool filters in there where you can just literally click a button and it'll show you all the most undervalued first round picks or something like that, or, you know, all the sleeper picks to make the Final Four based on seed and odds and stuff like that. So that's probably one of our most popular features. And then, you know, in terms of data, I our matchup predictor, where you can just select any two teams and see predictions and stats for them, is as comprehensive as anything I've seen out there. We've got five or six different algorithmic models that will show in terms of predicting any possible matchup between two tournament teams. And we'll also show, you know, if there's a spread and Vegas odds out for the game, we're showing those, and a whole bunch of matchup stats and tournament history and head to head stats for teams, similar opponent, you know, records against similar performance against similar opponents this year. And lastly, we have a Q&A forum too, where you can come and kind of ask questions and get if you have any sort of specific, you know, kind of particular type of wrinkle with your pool you're curious to hear about, we're busy, but we can try to weigh in quickly on it.
Yeah, no doubt. And I know you got one write up, your early write up done, and I'm sure David probably, yeah, is it you? I mean, I'm sure it's a tandem thing here, but this last second write up right before the games get started, when does that roll out for you?
Yeah, that'll be coming out Wednesday night, I think. Is that right, according to the release schedule, Tom?
Yeah, that'll be good to clarify. So we do two releases of brackets this week. So because there are some people who have early pick submission deadlines and they need to get their brackets in, you know, let's say by Tuesday or something like that.
Those masochists, like, who does that?
Yeah. So we have
just for the half point in those games.
On Monday, so we released it at about 6:30 or so Eastern time today. Monday is we run the numbers all Sunday night after they announce the bracket, and then we get our early deadline brackets, we call them, out on Monday afternoon. So those are out. You can come to the site. You can get customized picks for your pools if you need to get them in early. And then, you know, we continue analyzing and collecting data. Also, obviously, you know, you guys know from DFS, you know, there's nothing gained if your pick submission deadline is Thursday and you know, from submitting before Thursday. I mean, we're waiting to see if a player is going to get injured or suspended or whatever up to the latest possible minute. And so we do our final bracket release, or sort of official brackets for 2018, you know, later in the night on Wednesday. I think it'll be around like it might be 9 p.m. Eastern or something like that. And so that's when the official set in stone brackets are released. But you can get the early deadline brackets now and get a sense of, you know, usually they don't change too much unless there's a big change in betting odds or someone gets injured, something like that. You can get the early deadline brackets now.
All right, there is Tom Federico, David Hess, TeamRankings.com. Make sure you check them out, TeamRankings.com/grinders, $39, and check out this NCAA pool package. These guys clearly know what they're doing and hopefully help you win some giblets, as we like to say in the world of DFS, this NCAA tournament time. Hey, great chatting, guys. I'll be using your service undoubtedly this year, and hopefully looking forward to big things. So thanks again for your time, and good luck this tournament season. Get some sleep next week.
Yeah, next week is right. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.